elders, and I am the teaching pastor here, and we got a fun morning planned for you. A little bit different than normal, because we're going to be challenging you to do something crazy. Before I get to that, one quick announcement that I want to share. One of the things that we really want to do here at Genesis is help people grow in their faith to go deep, and we have community groups, which are, you know, go hang out in homes and kind of interact with a family of people. But we have another program we have called the Genesis Institute that is very specifically designed for short, very specific studies where people can kind of scour the scriptures and go a little bit deeper in a specific area of faith. And we've been doing this for a couple of years. We've tried to do it on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, you know, before we do worship. And it just, either people are really busy up here helping us set up or really busy trying to get their kids to church. And so we've kind of thought, you know, that's not working great. And so we're going to shift it and do something a little bit different starting next week. We're moving the Institute to Sunday evening, and we're doing it right next door to where the youth meet. And so, first of all, or right upstairs from where the youth meet, where Steve is saying, we're going to move you far enough so you can't hear what we're doing, because that's the secret, all right? The idea, we thought if we move it at that time, that place, first of all, if you are a parent of youth, this might be a perfect time for you to go, hey, I got to drop my kids off anyway. But for anybody in the church, the study we're doing is a study that deals with Christian beliefs written by a guy named Wayne Grudem. Great thinker, but the book is really simple, really easy. And it's just going to, it's a challenge to know as a Christian what you believe. As time goes, we'll look at other studies that deal maybe with life issues and other stuff. But this is kind of where we're starting on Sunday night. But the big deal is, first of all, if you're going to be a part of that, we need to know today. Jonna's going to order books. And so there's a $10 fee. If you'll catch him out in the foyer after church today, John Park, he will be out there just ready to get you registered for that. And even if you're like, hey, I don't have the 10 bucks, but just sign me up, we'll get a book order and you can pay later. So if you'll let him know today so that we can have enough books for everybody coming. We really hope that there will be seasons in everybody here's life that we stop and go, you know, this is helpful for me. I'm going to jump in on this class. And we know sometimes that adding a week to your schedule is crazy, but we feel like there's nothing more important in our lives than knowing God deeply. And we want to just provide this opportunity to do that. So short, to the point, studies like this, it's good for all of us at some point in time to be involved in those, all right? I want to welcome you this morning to the Genesis Travel Agency, where we are here today to organize your summer and raise the question, where are you going this summer? And there's all kinds of possibilities, ideas we have for trips for you. And so we just want to throw out a few possibilities of places that you might consider going, and maybe we can help you with one of these trips. We'll see how we do. Maybe this is where you want to go. Maybe the idea is we're going to head to Disney, you know, and go see Mickey Mouse and all that kind of stuff. And when we go to Disney, we get to ride rides and see our kids eat a lot of cotton candy and all that kind of stuff. And so if you're planning on going to Disney, I will let you know, the Genesis Travel Agency cannot help you with that trip. But another possibility is this. Maybe you just want to go to a beach. Now, this is my wife's dream trip. A week laying on a beach with no children. Because if there are children there, she'll never get to lay down. They'll be eating the sand. You know that. And there's all kinds of beaches you might go to. This looks like a Caribbean beach. And to be honest with you, if you go on one of our trips, we might be able to arrange a Caribbean beach trip. I will let you know that. But any other beaches, while you may think this is the ultimate trip this summer, and you may be thinking about going yourself or taking your family, if you want to do a beach vacation, the Genesis Travel Agency can't help you with that one. I'm sorry about that. All right, next possibility. Hey, Lake of the Ozarks or any lake here in Missouri. Maybe it's just I'm going to get in a boat and go fishing. And I'm going to spend, I need a week of vacation, and we're going to go fishing and hanging out the boat dock, and we're going to get our wave runners and all that kind of stuff. And man, maybe this for you guys is just like, man, my summer would be wonderful if I could just get away and go spend a week at the lake. Well, the Genesis Travel Agency cannot help you with that trip either. Man, we're not doing very good. All right, next one. Maybe you're like, hey, a big city. We're going to head to New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles or Las Vegas. And we're just going to go to a city and let what the city has dictate our week. We're just going to get away. If you're like me and you're going to go to one of these places, you're going to make sure you find a destination that has a ball game. We're going to go see a baseball game, right? That's a big deal. And so maybe you want to go to New York. York and check out the Yankees and the Mets and see the Statue of Liberty. If you want to go on this trip, the Genesis Travel Agency can't help you out. We got nothing for you, all right? Maybe the next one. How about a cruise? I hear people going, yes, praise Jesus for big boats. That's not me. To me, for some reason, all right, you got to know part of the story is we went down to Gulf Shores a couple years ago, and I just want to go on a deep sea fishing adventure. And about 15 minutes in a deep sea fishing adventure, I was on one side, my daughter Alex was on the other side, and we were puking in stereo. And so the idea of going and spending like a whole week out on a big boat, just not for me, okay? But some of you are like, especially now that this thing in Branson and that boat out in the middle of the ocean, those two boats got stranded and people had to spend like days on there. No way, but maybe this is you. And so maybe you wanna go get on a boat and go see sites and destinations and hit the Caribbean or hit Alaska or something like that. And I think for some of you, that might be a wonderful plan this summer, but the Genesis Travel Agency can't help with this one either. And here's another one. Maybe some of you, your idea of the ultimate trip is to sit on your deck in an easy chair drinking margaritas or a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you would choose to drink and enjoy. And that one you don't need help with. You can figure that one out on your own, right? But the Genesis Travel Agency does have a few trips, and I want to show you a couple pictures of the trips that we do have. We can send you there. That's Port-au-Prince, Haiti. We can send you here. That's around Cayambe, Ecuador. We can send you here. That there will be around Charleston, Missouri, and some of you are like, hey, I see my face. You've jumped in on the Genesis Travel Agency before and gone there, haven't you? And then we can send you here. Is that the last one? All right. We also have Genesis Kids Clubs coming this summer, and that's another possibility that you can jump on in a neighborhood park. So rather than being on your deck, you could be in a neighborhood park. We can arrange those trips for you. This morning, our big question is, where are you going this summer? We're going to look into the Gospel of Mark and be challenged by this, but here's the deal. We live sometimes, I don't know about you, but I feel like my life is stuck in a box. That sometimes it feels like a really little box, sometimes it feels like a big box, but I feel like I'm trapped inside these walls and this whole life that just is mechanical and rhythmic and just, I'm stuck. And while I'm in the box, some of you are like, don't do that again. While I'm in the box, I feel like there's something more. I feel like, man, there's got to be a way to get outside of this box. And for a lot of us, the idea of vacation is, man, that's just a week out of the box, okay? I get up every morning. In my life is two girls that wake up screaming and just wanting to get out of their room, and really our desire is that they would stay in there longer. And the day gets going, and the day just, there is a rhythmic, this is the way life is to what we do. And you feel the tension of the box. And then you go on vacation, you think, this will help me get outside the box. But I don't know about you. And you got to hear me say this, okay? I'm going to make this very clear right now. There's nothing wrong with going to Disney or on a cruise or anything like that, okay? I'm not saying, I think family vacations are a good thing. But the challenge this morning is to consider the possibility to vacation for the glory of God. That maybe there is something that's outside the box. Because this is what I find when I go on vacation is that when I leave, I'm so excited. And I just feel like, man, we're busting through the box. But then I get in the routine. And what happens is you get on vacation and you have the same rhythmic routine in life. It's just in a different spot. And you come home and there is this moment where, first of all, you're about 3 hours from home and you're like, you know, you remember when you left, you're like, I just want to get away from home. And then you're driving and you get about 3 hours from home. You're like, I just want to be home. But then you walk in the door and there's this kind of weird emptiness that you feel because you're like, I didn't really get outside the box. I just found the corners. That's all I did is find the corners of the box. I didn't get outside of it. And there, you're back in your house going, there's got to be more than this. I feel like my life is more than Mickey Mouse and a fishing lure and dirty diapers and whatever it is, the rhythm of your life in the boxes and the way you try to escape on vacation, all that kind of stuff. And what we want to show you this morning, first of all, in the text of scriptures, we want to show you how Jesus speaks in the lives of people, and that there's going to be two responses to Jesus and the message of Jesus. One group of people are going to reject him and be massively offended by him. Another group of people are going to hear what he says to them, respond to the gospel, but that gospel response is going to do something in them, okay? But as we do that, we're going to see this Jesus who commissions people. And we're going to tell you that all of us need to find the commissioning of Jesus if we're really going to understand the gospel in our lives. That's the challenge. So while you're sitting there, grab a Bible. We're going to be in Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6 of the Bible. If you don't have a Bible, we have Bibles at the end of your rows. We can pass those down, make sure everybody has a Bible. If you don't have a Bible at home that's yours, we want to invite you to keep that one as our gift to you this morning. In that Bible, somebody shout out the page we're at in that Bible. 717. We'll be on page 717 in that Bible. If you are with us, you probably realize we just skipped chapter 5. We're coming back next week to that. We're going to jump forward a little bit because we wanted this special service, and this text really just speaks into that very well for us. And so the Gospel of Mark is the story of Jesus through the eyes of a man named John Mark, who was a very young man when Jesus was alive on the earth. Now it's probably 2 or 3 decades later, but he has gotten very close to Jesus' best friend, a man named Peter, and he is writing what Justin Martyr, a first century or second century church father, calls the memoirs of Peter. So literally what we have is the words and the message preached by the apostle Peter, who was one of Jesus' closest friends on the earth, and he's telling us these stories, and this morning we're going to see the stories of Jesus going to his hometown and then his interaction with these 12 men that we call his disciples, and we're going to show you how one group is totally content in the box, and the other group says, I am not made for this box, all right? So before we get there, I do want to read one passage from a different place in the Bible because it connects to our message to the text this morning, but it also tells us the mission of the Messiah. The whole Old Testament promises one who would come, who would be on mission for God, would be the extension of the mission of God, and that his mission would reach to all kinds of places. And Isaiah 61 is one of the passages of the Bible we call a messianic passage, where it is telling us what the mission of Jesus would be about. And this is what it says. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. That word good news, by the time we get to the New Testament, and I talk to you about the gospel. That's what the gospel. He's brought me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn. To grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Now, without telling you every line in this, it's not hard to see in this that as the Bible begins to point forward, this was written about 800 years before the coming of Jesus, and it's pointing forward to the coming of the Messiah. It says the mission of God that will be expressed in the coming of Jesus is this, that there is a brokenness in the world, that we are trapped in the brokenness of the box. We can't get out of it, and because of that, our lives are twisted, they are broken, they are hard. And the ministry of Messiah is to announce that the box is open, and he's going to bring wholeness and beauty and gladness and joy and the good news of the gospel to people who are trapped in the box. And that message is for everyone. Okay, so Jesus shows up in his hometown. Mark chapter 6. Verse 1, he says he went away from there and came to his hometown. It's a little town, about 500 people. At the time of Jesus, it's just a little bitty redneck village. Not a whole lot goes on there. In the book of John, when they're talking about Jesus, somebody goes, well, man, nothing good comes out of Nazareth. The Messiah can't come from Nazareth because nothing good comes out of Nazareth. It's like being, you know, Detmer, House Springs, or, you know, one of these small towns. You're like, man, it's just a little town. You wouldn't expect anything great coming from there. Well, that's kind of what they said. So we're like, man, that's wrong. You just talked about where I'm from, and we're fighting after church. Well, I'm sorry. Anyway, You do realize that some people think that about Eureka too. Like if you go east of here into Eureka, that's just a little redneck town. All right, so we're all lumped in together. Get over it. It says he went to his hometown Nazareth, and after his disciples followed him, and on the Sabbath, and we if you've been with us, this is what Jesus does. It's the day of worship and rest for Hebrews people, Jewish people. He goes to synagogue. And when he goes to synagogue, his reputation is growing. Usually, like if Jesus were to show up here this morning, I'd be like, yeah, I got a message ready, but we'll save it for next week. Jesus, you're on, man. Go preach. I'm getting out of the way. And they've heard the possibility that this man might be the Messiah. They get the pastor, the lead teachers get out of the way and say, Jesus, you teach. And so they let him teach. And it says, on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished. I'm going to pause right there because I'll talk about their astonishment in a minute, because not the type of astonishment you expect. But here's what happens. Jesus stands up and begins to teach. And it's not in this version of the story, but this story is also told in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke, two of the other gospels, stories about Jesus. And both those texts tell us that Jesus taught out of Isaiah 61. He opened the passage that I just read to you, and he read it, and then this was his message. This prophecy is fulfilled today in your hearing. In other words, here's what Jesus is saying. The Old Testament, everybody who read the text went, ooh, that's a promise of the coming Messiah. And Jesus read the text, and his sermon is, I'm him. I am the one that this text has been promising. And the Bible tells us there that they were astonished. Luke tells us they were astonished. And then Jesus turns on them and says, but you're rebellious people and you will not follow me. And there's a curse on you. This is the curse, the same curse that God gave to the people who rejected the Old Testament prophets. And they try to throw, at the end of this story, it's not Mark's version, he doesn't tell us this. Luke's version, they try to throw Jesus off a cliff. They don't dig his message. They don't like it. They're offended. We're going to find out about this. And so Jesus says, my mission, the mission of God that is being expressed to me, is to come to broken people and to announce freedom, to come to hurting people and announce healing, to come to people who don't know that there is good news, who are filled with mourning, and to tell them that the good news brings them joy, and it's for everybody. And Jesus comes, and this is his ministry. You've been with us. The book of Mark is just these stories of Jesus healing people, loving them, making a difference in people's lives, calling people out. But he comes back to his hometown, and look at the response. It says, watch it. He began to teach the synagogue, and many heard him were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty words done by his hands? We think, okay, they're raising questions that sound good, but keep going. Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary and the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon's? Are his sisters not here with us? And they took offense at him. Now here's what's going on. First, they begin to debate and have these big questions. Where did he get this wisdom? Where did he get these ideas? What gives him the right to speak to us like that? That's really what's going on. And then he says, man, he's just a carpenter. We've been around him, and he's been working in a woodworking shop. There hasn't been anything in his life that has shown this. Every once in a while, you'll see a cartoon that shows Jesus at like 12 years old parting the sea. This text tells us that Jesus' life up until the time he was 30 was the life of a normal person in life. He didn't do miracles. He was not voted, like, you know, and when he graduated from high school, there, you know, when they did senior awards, Jesus did not win most likely to be Messiah in Nazareth High School, okay? Now, obviously, he was sinless. He didn't disobey his parents. I'm sure they noticed something about just this compliant, good kid. But now they're going, man, he's just the carpenter. And then there's a very interesting phrase. It says, he's the son of who? Who's the text say? It's the son of Mary. Don't miss this. In Hebrew culture, you weren't called by your mother. You were called by your father. People in little bitty redneck towns don't forget, okay? They knew that Joseph and Mary announced their engagement, and 4 months later, they had a baby. They knew that there were things swirling around that it wasn't even Joseph's kid. This is the equivalent of calling Jesus a bastard. I mean, not in the curse way. It's literally, it's Mary's kid. Not even called the father out by name. And we know him. We know his brothers. We know they're just a little normal, average group of people. What gives him the right to come in here and to announce this great mission of God and to call us out? How dare he? And the Bible says they were offended. The word comes from a Greek word that we get our word scandal from. They were scandalized. They stumbled over this. They just went, this is not, nah, man, we're not listening to this kid. We know him. He's just a carpenter. He's just a kid. And here's the issue that I think is going on here that is something that's very dangerous, especially if you've spent your life in church. They completely missed the mission of Jesus because they are too familiar with Jesus. Now, y'all hear me on this, okay? They completely missed the mission of Jesus because they were too familiar with Jesus. A lot of you are new to the Christian deal, and us calling you to go on mission trips is crazy. You're just like, I don't know what to do with this, but you hear it, and you're like, man, but there's a little bit of excitement. But for a lot of us, we grew up in church. We were in, you know, three-year-old Sunday school class, and we had, you know, the sweet little old lady teaching us Bible verses. And by the time we got in five-year-old Sunday school class, kindergarten class, we learned how to terrorize the class and drive those sweet little ladies who taught Sunday school nuts, okay? And we went through the system. We hit youth group, and we began to feel like, man, I'm in church, but I know the stories. You knew how to answer all the questions. Anytime there was a Bible drill or a discussion about Jesus, you knew the answer. You threw up your hand and you always knew the answer. And if you didn't know the answer, you knew the answer was probably Jesus. So you learned to be the first one to raise your hand and say, it's Jesus. And the teacher went, that's sweet, but no, it's actually something different. But you know, you were the one who were always, I mean, you just get it. You are really familiar with Jesus. And you got to get this. The real danger with people who get really familiar with Jesus is that they are so familiar with Jesus, they miss him. And I want to tell you, my experience is this. I've spent my life in churches that were filled with people that anytime you stood up and challenged them, that the mission of God is to a broken and hurting world. That is the mission, and he has called us to join it. They just go, don't do that. We're too busy having our Sunday school class where we could sit in a circle and start debating the great theological issues of who is Jesus, what the right does he have to share with us. You see what's going on here? Instead of hearing the call of God to be transformed, they begin to debate whether Jesus has the right to say that or not. They are sitting in a class just having fun talking about the deep things of God, and they miss the Messiah who's in the midst. You hear that? And they are offended. Now, y'all, you got to know that you are in a church that is never going to get comfortable sitting in this room. We want to talk about the deep things of God, but we deeply believe that to meet Jesus and experience the gospel will transform us in a way that eventually we will become missionaries and we will be an extension of Isaiah 61. That we will see, this is Jesus, it's also us, because we are living the Christ life, we're following him. But his own hometown, and I'll never forget going, you know, the opportunity I had when I was younger. I used to think, man, it would be cool to go back to Maplewood Baptist Church, church I grew up in, and be the pastor there someday. So this one year, it was Christmas, and they invited me to come preach for the Christmas Eve service. And I worked really hard because I was going to go back to the people that I had grown up with, and I was just going to bring them a message that would challenge them to be transformed and be different, that the mission of Jesus was this. And I was so excited. I went and preached that message. At the end of the message, everybody came up to me and went, I remember going on the RA camping trip with you, and you know, I remember doing this. And it was, you know, nobody was like, man, that challenged me. Everybody was like, I remember you when you were a little runt, and you could... They're saying the same thing to me. Now, when you say it to me, okay, whatever, I'm nobody. But I understand what's going on in this text because I understand what it was like to go back to your hometown and try to preach and hear Jesus say, a prophet's not without honor except in his own hometown. And that's what happens in the text. Jesus, look at what happens. It says, they took offense at him, verse 4, and Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his relatives in his own household. We learned earlier in Mark that his own family was rejecting him at this point. And he could do no mighty works there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and he healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief and he went out among the villages teaching. Now, here's what goes on here. It says that Jesus' response to this is to make a declaration, a prophet's not without honor. And I told you, I understand that. But when Maplewood Baptist Church just doesn't really hear a message I preach, that's nothing. But when you reject the Messiah because you're too familiar, when Jesus is a stumbling block to you because he's calling you to get out of the box and live outside of your comfort zone and to live for something greater than yourself, and you go, listen, I just want a Christianity that lets me sit on Sunday and go about my life. And all of a sudden you hear this call and you're like, man, I can't be part of a place like that. They push too hard on me. All of a sudden, we're too familiar with Jesus. We can sit around and debate, and we can have more Bible studies and Sunday school classes, but the call to go live our lives for something greater, we're just not going to do that. You realize that the gospel produces this in us? And the text says that Jesus couldn't do many miracles. Now, this doesn't mean Jesus' power was limited. It's something that's true. When a group of people do not believe God for great things, generally God's not going to do great things among them. Just the truth. It's not that his power is limited. It's just Jesus went, these people are content going to synagogue on Sunday and having theological discussions. They don't want to hear the real call of the gospel. And so other than healing a few people in his hometown, he went to the next village and just started going to other villages. Sadly, I look back at the churches that I've been in life and I'm watching churches dwindle down, churches that used to run, like my home church, Maplewood, that I wouldn't preach. It's not because of me. You got to hear this. But the church that I, not because they rejected my sermon. Let me put it that way. I'm not trying to connect those dots, okay? That it was one of those sweet little days where everybody just patted me on the back and went, oh, we're so proud of you. Thank you. But as people tried to challenge them to be a people on mission, they just got ticked. And over the years, that church that when I was a teenager ran 600-700, they run about 40 or 50 there. Jesus doesn't do many mighty miracles among them. Breaks my heart. I just want to weep. Y'all, I don't want to be that church. I refuse to be part of a church like that anymore. I want to be part of churches like the next group of people. So let's look at this. There's also a group of people that are commissioned, real quick. And he called the 12 and began to send them out two by two, and he gave them authority over unclean spirits, and he charged them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. And he said to them, whenever you enter a house, stay there until you depart from there, and if any place will not receive you and they will not listen to you when you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet as a testimony against them. So they went out and proclaimed that people should repent. And they cast out many demons and anointed them with oil, as many who were sick, and healed them. Now, here's what's going on, okay? Catch this. What's happening is that the story, Mark is the great storyteller. He's giving us two groups of people that are right next to each other. And actually, as we get into this, there's actually a third person that we'll get into, John the Baptist, that this call to follow Jesus is going to cost him his head. It's not an easy call. I'm not standing up here saying, man, if you go to Haiti, here's what's going to happen. You're going to come home and go, man, it was better in Disney World. It's going to be hard. But Jesus is calling these men, and watch what he does. As he starts to help them understand what Isaiah 61 means in their life, how the gospel will transform them, he sends them on a short-term mission trip. This is what he does. He sends them and says, here's what's going to happen. For a short period of time, I'm going to send you in pairs. You're going to go. I don't want you to take anything with you. I want you to have to be totally dependent on me. You're going to go into towns, and in some towns, people are going to hear what you preach, and they're going to go, will you come stay with us? When they do that, you go stay with them and stay in that house until you're done there, and then come home. If they go, we don't want to have anything to do with you, and they reject you, shake your dust off your feet. It's a symbolic image. It says, the message has been preached, now you're responsible for it. That's what that means. When he says, shake the dust off your feet, he's not saying, because, you know, you eventually will come back to the Hubbard house and she'll make you take your shoes off. He's saying, it's a symbolic act that says, the message has been proclaimed, it's now your responsibility, and you're rejecting it, so you are responsible for God for what you've heard. That's the image here. And it says they went and they preached repentance, to follow Jesus, to turn from your own gods, to turn from your sins, and to believe and trust in Jesus, okay? And so they go, and they go out and do this mission, but what I want you to see here is as Jesus is growing this apostle band, this band of disciples, he is preparing them for the day he will leave, and they will take the mission of Jesus and multiply it. And in the text before it says Jesus couldn't do many miracles. And then he goes back to teaching, but now he is multiplying his ministry. He is multiplying the effects of Isaiah 61, his messianic mission, by inviting people who have experienced the gospel now to go. And there's a phrase here that's really important to understand this. And it's already been echoed. It's in verse 7. It says he called the 12, and the Greek text says to himself. And he began to send them. In Mark chapter 3, the first calling of the disciples, Jesus says that, or the text says this, and Jesus called them to himself so that he might send them. This is discipleship. This is what it means to be a follower of Jesus, that God calls you to himself. And the first step, it's not that we go first. We have to come to Jesus and begin to experience Jesus deeply. But Jesus calls you to himself so that he might send you. He might send you. And the way Jesus does it here is by sending people on short-term mission trips the first time, because eventually he's going to send them on the mission that is their whole life. And so they go on these trips, and you just got to hear what's going on here. For us, this is the point. The point of the day and really of our church is that we want to be a church that takes people who don't know Jesus and gives them a safe place to come to Jesus, okay? But once you come to Jesus, we want you to understand that the essence of what it means to be a follower of Jesus is to be close to Jesus and then realize you're sent. And sometimes the best way to wrestle with that is to go do a crazy adventure in the name of Jesus. Nothing will cause you to wrestle with it more. Nothing will cause you to interact with it more. And so our challenge as a church is that we got a bunch of experiences this summer to prime the pump for that, okay? A couple of them are overseas, one here in the States and all that kind of stuff. And I know immediately, here's what's going on in your mind. First of all, you're going, I can't do both a vacation and that. Wrestle with it deeply. I'm not telling you what God's telling you to do, but wrestle with it deeply. But some of you are already going, wait a minute, I can't afford that. I mean, I know that Haiti's going to be 1,000, Ecuador 1,600, going to Charleston's going to cost me a couple hundred dollars. I can't afford that. I want you to see what Jesus said to his disciples. He said, don't take any bread with you. Don't take more than one shirt. All you can take with you is your staff. Don't wear your good shoes. All you can wear is sandals, walking shoes. That's it. You leave your stuff at home. Why? Because you have to depend on me. And some of you are here this morning. You need to hear this clearly. The whole point, you feel the stirring of God to go. And part of that message is God going, I know you can't afford it. You're going to have to trust me. You may have to make some sacrifices. Some of y'all are going, the idea of going on a trip overseas and I can only take one suitcase, I cannot take my makeup. And the call of Jesus to disciples, it looks, this is not a universal call, okay? This is to them on these mission trips. But listen, anybody who goes is going to have to make sacrifices, but there is also this real deep understanding that, yeah, you're going to have to depend on God and trust him. Now, we're going to help you with that. But eventually, you're going to have to go, yeah, I'm in. I'm going. Figure out what that looks like, okay? And so for us, this is who we are as a church. In fact, our dream, let me cast vision. Our dream is to be a missionary sending church where as we grow and develop, we will become the type of church that every couple months you'll hear about another trip that's going to another place in the world and a group of people are going and you'll go, hey, I might go on that one. And we're going to start using gifts and challenges. But to get those things to happen, we need some first serve where we whet appetites, where people go and do this kind of stuff. So that's what this summer is about, okay? And so there's kind of four opportunities. I need to run through these real quick and then we're going to hear from some people. First of all, we are going to go to Ecuador. We're going to be part of a church planning mission trip to Ecuador in June, June 24th to July 4th. We're also sending a group of people to Haiti. And we're going to go work in an orphanage there and a Christian school and that kind of stuff, August 2nd through 9th. Those two people in the back are the best looking people I know. But the girls are gorgeous too. Oh my gosh, they will... Anyway, all right, next, we're also going to Charleston, Missouri. Anybody who's been to Charleston knows this guy? Anybody remember his name? Mo, that's right, that's Mo. Charleston, and this is a whole family. This is a mission trip for the whole Genesis family, but also your whole family. So families any shape and sizes, even if you have little kids. We structured this trip for you. Now here's what's gonna happen. We are emphasizing the two international trips now. We will start talking at the end of March, beginning of April, about Charleston and enlisting you at that point in time. We're going to have a meeting the first Sunday in April to really push that and get people signed up and get going. And then the third opportunity, we have our kids' clubs, the second through fourth weeks in July. We're going to be emphasizing those. Those are here in our own backyard. We're hoping to have as many maybe as five or six Genesis kids' clubs. This is another way to live out the mission of God, but that's right here, second through fourth week of July. And we're going to be emphasizing those and really raising up people to make those happen in May, okay? But this morning, we are challenging you to go on one of the crazy adventures. And we're going to bring a couple people up here, and we're going to let them talk to us. I'm going to interview them for a few minutes. We're going to talk about their ministry, but here's what I want you to do. You walked in and went, I can't go on that any of those. That's crazy. I just can't do it. I want you to listen for a minute, and then start deep in your soul, start stirring with the possibility that God is calling you to vacation for the glory of God and do something just crazy this summer. So first person I want to invite is David Meyer. David is a church planting missionary to Ecuador, and he's going to come up here, and I'm going to ask him a few questions, have him share with us about who he is, what he does, his family, that kind of stuff. So everybody, welcome David this morning. David, tell us about your family.
Well, my wife, Brenda, is down here in the front. I got two boys in the children's club, Daniel and Luke. Daniel is 6 and Luke is 3.
Very cool, very cool. And what's the name of your organization? What do you do? That sort of stuff?
We work with an organization called Crossworld, which is an independent mission that just means that we're not affiliated with any particular denomination. And we are church planters down in the country of Ecuador, South America, in a city called Cayambe.
Now, when you say you're a church planting missionary, that means that you're doing, I mean...
What that means is our focus is primarily doing what you're doing here, making disciples. So we do a lot of work individually with people, one-on-one, making disciples and training them to disciple other people. So that what that means is, too, that we go to communities where there is no gospel presence, there is no evangelical church, and our desire is that there be a congregation that rises up in each one of those communities. And we have we chose the city of Cayambe because there's not really any other good churches in that community. It's a city of about 45,000 people. And so if you put that in perspective, you know, in a city of 45,000 here in the States, how many churches could you pick from if you open the phone book? But in Cayambe, that is really not an option at all. So we've got our first congregation is started there. We began there about 4 years ago. And the congregation is up and running. There's about 65 people meeting together now in a community center there, even while we're back here in the States.
Man, that's awesome. That's so cool. Tell us a little bit about the country, the people with whom you're, the culture, that kind of stuff.
Well, we live in the Andes Mountains. So we live out in llama country and the Andean condor. We live at about 10,000 feet above sea level. And the people are of Indian and Spanish descent, so that's a mix of both the Indian culture and the Spanish culture together, blended together. They speak Spanish, but is mixed with some Quechua Indian words, and they have a really rich, deep culture that goes back over 2,000 years. Because you're coming, because of the time period you're coming, you'll be right in the middle of our festival period. So some of the pictures that you see on the screens and what we have out on our table of them all dressed up and all that ceremonial costume and all of that, you'll get to see that while you're there. And some of these are traditions that go back thousands of years before the Spanish came in and conquered. This is a festival. This picture right here is a festival to St. Peter and the sun. And those two things sound strange that they go together, but that's how the culture works. They're very much in tune with their ancient traditions of worshiping nature, as well as the Catholic side of it, where they have adopted Catholic terms to a lot of their worship style and their worship of the patron saint of the area, which is St. Peter. And so this is you'll be there right over the festival period, actually, when you come. So you'll get to see some of this.
Very cool. What led you and your family to do the stuff you're doing, to do the mission, to go to the place, all that kind of stuff?
You know, what you're talking about exactly is how I got into missions. When I was a freshman in college, same kind of deal, grew up in a very traditional church. I was doing the Sunday morning thing. That was fine. But I had no interest in ministry whatsoever. I had no desire whatsoever to be in missions. But in my local church, there was a missions trip opportunity came up to go to Ecuador. And same kind of deal. Could never afford it, but sent out some letters to people I knew, wanted to go. But for me, it was mostly just the adventure. I considered it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go see another part of the world. But being there for 2 weeks, working side-by-side with the people, changed my life. And God really used that experience to call me into missions. When I was there working alongside of missionaries and really understood what it was that they do, God just spoke, you know, almost not an audible voice, but almost just certainly in my heart said, this is what I've been preparing you for. This is it.
You need now, if I remember right, when you met your wife, she told you she was willing to do anything except one thing. And am I remembering this right?
Well,
and what was that one thing that she said she would never do?
Yeah, marry me. Yeah,
well, that wasn't it.
No, she. We actually met in Ecuador. Brenda is a missionary kid. Her mom and dad also work in Ecuador. They work in South Quito, about 2 hours away from us. Still work there today. And I actually met her on that trip. That's not why I went back to Ecuador, but it does come. Sometimes mission trips come with fringe benefits. We met at that time, and because I was 18 and she was 17, and we were working in the same. I was working with her dad in the same church, doing some construction those 2 weeks. Everybody in the church and everybody on the team was playing matchmaker for the two of us that whole time. And that, trust me, that did not help my cause at all. The more they tried to make the match, the more she was like, I don't even want to speak to him or see him or anything. So we did end up going to college together, because after that trip, I changed my major to Christian education and missions, and went to Calvary Bible College in Kansas City. And she ended up attending there for college as well. And it took about a year and a half to wear her down. But no, actually, she went through a period too where she had to come to that same realization of, where is God calling me? What is really my purpose in life?
Cool.
So when she made that decision to return to missions, then God put the rest of the pieces of the puzzle together for us.
What's your greatest joy in your ministry right now?
By far and away, the greatest joy in the ministry is seeing transformed lives.
Awesome.
Seeing people who were on the point of divorce being reunited, people who've been living together for 18 years, accept Christ and honor God by getting married and having a marriage relationship before God, their kids transformed, kids who were rebellious and out of control, obedient to their parents, and just seeing people who were downcast and downtrodden, just their whole face, their whole way they carry themselves, their whole existence is transformed completely.
Awesome. Awesome. Any big challenges right now?
Really, the biggest challenge in our ministry is always the poverty, in my mind. Probably the hardest part about being a missionary where we work, and I'm sure it's the case in Haiti as well, is that there's so much poverty that it can just be overwhelming. And you don't know who to help and how to help and what to do. And even within our church congregation, when the average person in our church makes $200 a month, It's hard for the church to advance, you know.
Awesome.
We can't just have like a Sunday where we say, oh, we're going to collect an offering and do this. One of the exciting things about your team is that you're coming during a time when our church has finally grown to the point, we're meeting at a community center right now, but we're grown to the point that the church has decided they need a permanent place to meet. Mm. So they're looking for property right now to buy, and it looks like they've gotten together enough money to be able to buy a lot. So we're praying that and asking God if that's his will to have church property. By the time you guys come, you can help us out.
Beautiful.
Doing some work on the property there, as well as the other ministry with like a VBS that you're...
Any cool stories to share?
Probably the best story of a transformed life comes from a lady in our church named Rosa. Rosa was... And it seems strange to think that in today's world that this kind of thing can happen. But when Rosa was very young, she was sold by her parents to a rich family in Quito, who then used her as a servant girl, basically sold as a slave. Mm. She was raised basically as the servant girl in the house in Quito until that family sold her to another family, who and she worked for them until apparently until she was old enough to get out and get out on her own. Then, but she never attended school, so she can't read and write. She then met a young man, had three children with him, and 2 weeks after the birth of their third child, their first daughter, her husband passed away and died, and left her as a single mom with three kids and no source of income, no education. And so she had been just eking out her life in whatever way she possibly could. By the time we met her, she was working in one of the flower plantations. Cayambe is the rose capital of the world, so there's rose plantations all around. She was working as a laborer in one of those plantations. We met her kids first through our kids club, and then eventually we met her. And when we found out one of her youngest daughter, the daughter that was born right before her husband died, was born with a hole in her heart. And it was a surgery that could have been very simple when she was a young baby, but she was then 14 years old, and she went into the hospital, and they were saying she had to be operated on immediately for that. And the mom had no idea how to fund it or anything like that. We helped her because we were helping her and helping her child and taking her to Quito and taking her to the hospitals and things like that. She began attending the church. And over time, just through the experience of the love of Christ through us and our church family to her, she became a believer. And today, she's a different person.
Awesome.
She used to walk around with her head down all the time. I'm sure the way she was trained to be seen and not heard, and you always had to listen very closely to hear what she was saying. Today, she walks with her head up, smile on her face, greets you with a big handshake. Mm. Every morning. So it is a transformation, and all of her kids are believers now today. All of them teens, and two of the boys are just really growing. I'm looking at them possibly for in the future becoming pastors or leaders
wow.
in the church.
Wow. So. Isn't that great? Wow, that's beautiful. Hey, thanks, man. Yeah. Thank you. Hey, I want to introduce another friend of ours, Carl Vorst, and his wife, Carol, lead Emerhation Bones and Me. It's a ministry that is in Haiti that we've partnered with before. We supported with our Advent Conspiracy offering, and most of you all have probably never met Carl, but his heart just thrills mine and challenges me. And so, Carl, tell us about yourself, your family, what you got going on, and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, have to talk about our three children because of all the grandkids. All live in St. Louis, which is really great. They're grown, and have two older grandkids, and had a granddaughter born 5 weeks ago, Cecilia, and twins coming in about 4 weeks. They live down on the hill. Wife Carol is a retired school teacher. She spent 21 years teaching, has a master's in education, and she put that into great use in the ministry in Haiti. And I'm still working at Boeing, engineer there, and Boeing is very flexible. It was at I threatened to retire, so that helped the flexibility a little bit. So they say, okay, you're going. And my boss just said, boy, you and your wife are brave.
That's cool. That's awesome. I mentioned the name of your organization, but tell us what Emerhation Bones of Me does and what you guys got going on.
Okay. Well, Emerhation Bones of Me means American Haitian Good Friends, and better known, easier to say, House of Hope, which is the orphanage with 27 girls that are, we have them, instead of an institution, it's a large home environment. And along with that is Patty School. You know, education, finding good education is difficult. So we started Patty School a number of years ago for our kids. And right now there's 70 kids, combination of ours and kids from the neighborhood. A clinic, which we'd started in construction and then stopped because of an unreliable builder. But going down next week to get it going again. Mm-hmm. And then the exciting thing is church that's meeting on the property. Very and cool. Have about 130 people meeting on Sunday morning.
Wow.
And not including about 60 kids for youth church, kids coming from the neighborhood.
Wow. That's awesome. Now, you know, for most of us, Haiti was just there, and then a little over a year ago, that changed, and Haiti's been in the news, and we're familiar with what's gone on and the brokenness of the country. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the people you work with? Tell us about the kids who are in the orphanage, but also about the culture around it and what's happening there.
Okay. Well, the kids, it's an orphanage, but really it's orphaned and abandoned kids, and 27 girls, and they're selected based on their need. Had have two girls that were found wandering on the street. They were one of them came out of Tent City, and parents couldn't take care of them. We rescued them, and then pictures of Moya. Mm-hmm. Little Moya came this year. She was abandoned by her parents at the hospital, and agency came around and knew that we were. You know, we're a good home, brought Moya to us. She was supposed to be 6 months old and weighed about 16 pounds. She actually had a full set of teeth, so she probably was closer to a year old, cerebral palsy, and had our full-time missionary, Shara, kind of adopt her, and able to get her to the States now. And under a medical visa, and trying to evaluate and find some ways to help her.
Very cool. It's tough stuff, but it's good stuff, mm-hmm. isn't it? What led you and Carol and your family to get involved there and to do what you're doing?
Well, it's kind of a common story. A church was having a mission trip to Haiti, and we just thought it'd be a nice thing to do. So that was in 1990. We went and fell in love with the people. Carol saw the need for education, and for the next 2 years, she led teacher training seminars, and some of the teachers still have their certificates they got. And as an engineer, I saw lots of things to fix. And we just fell in love, and then there was a period of time where there was a travel embargo to Haiti, couldn't travel. And when that opened up again, a friend of ours knew of somebody who was having to retire from orphanage that she had started because of grandchildren needs. It was a blended family, two families together. And so we took over Amor Haitian Bones of Me and House of Hope. It was a small building in a really bad part of town.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. What's your greatest joy right now in what you do?
Greatest joy?
Greatest joy.
I think the greatest joy is to see changed lives. You know, there are a lot of things that it's easier to do things, always lots of physical things to do, but really it's all about changing lives, and it was a great opportunity in Haiti for evangelism in everything we do, whether it's taking boxes of food to tent cities, the church that came, and if you're asking about a cool story, I think this is a cool story that I'll tell you about. The church... And now we have opportunities to go in the neighborhood, and we deliver food, evangelize, have program, kids program coming in, another evangelism opportunity, but then also to give dignity to people who have trouble finding dignity.
Very cool. Biggest challenge right now?
Biggest challenge, well, it's another common theme is where do you start? You know, you see all the poverty around you, and some it's a matter of looking for God's guidance on what we should do and how we should do it, so that we don't overburden ourselves and not really take good care of the people who we're serving.
Very cool.
And there's actually another challenge that's related, but not. It's of course the government. And getting containers released, and just it's not always people with their hands out for money, just people not moving.
You're talking about shipping containers, that you fill with all the stuff you need here, but getting it from the edge of the ocean just a few miles in the House of Hope is...
It takes 2 weeks to get it from St. Louis to the port in Port-au-Prince. And Carol and I were both supposed to be here. Then she was, and I was. And we've been delaying our trips a week at a time because a container is almost out.
Wow. So 2 weeks to the port. How long from the port to?
It's maybe 3 months or more.
2 weeks to get it across the ocean, 3 months to get it from the port, just at 8 or 10 miles to the...
It's about 2 miles.
Oh, okay.
2 miles.
There you go.
2 miles.
Isn't that amazing?
And every time you ship, it's a different story. Yeah. So you plan everything for the current shipping to take care of all the issues from the previous trips, and then there's always a new issue.
I'll thank Carl for being with us this morning. Carl, thanks. Thanks for sharing. Now, y'all, here's the deal, okay? Jesus, if you're a follower of Jesus, Jesus called you so that he might send you. Just bottom line, you were called to live the mission of God, and if you're not, you are eventually going to be offended at the gospel call. You're going to be like the people in Nazareth. You're going to get content. You're going to want to sit around and debate with people. This is not the church that's going to happen. We're going to be kicking you in the rear all the time saying, man, let's go serve for the glory of God. Because we know this. You are not made for the box. You are not made to live inside here. And the only way to get out is to see a mission that is bigger than yourself and to find that mission and to begin to figure out God's call on your life and to live for something that is bigger than you are and bigger than the box. Now, this is a crude illustration, but I brought my son's ball, little bouncy ball. That ball was made to bounce outside the box, but somebody had to open the lid to make it happen. Let me tell you what a short-term mission experience will do. It will open the box. Listen, the common theme is this. It's the first thing Leslie said. Going on a short-term mission trip ruined my life. But not one person up here who shared it did it without a big smile on their face. You won't be the same. You will experience call and God's purpose. You'll go back to your job and it won't feel like a box anymore because you'll be living for something. You'll get up in the morning when you have to change a diaper. You'll look at your kids differently. You'll when you're writing your bills out that you can't afford, you will be drawn to the beauty of the kids and the families and the people you worked with. It'll change you. And I just want you to deeply wrestle with what you're going to do this summer. That's the challenge today. Now, here's what's going to happen. We're going to show a video. We're going to sing a couple songs. We're probably going to go a little long. I didn't mean to, but we're probably going to go a little long. And then after we get done, though, the folks you just heard from, we're going to the Commons. And for people who are like, I need to find out more, I want to hear, they're going to go share a little bit. Each guy is going to share a little bit about what the mission, our people will be doing in country. And then there will be tables set up where you can ask more questions, just get more information. There are packets about both mission trips. For the next few weeks, we'll be emphasizing, but the deadline to get registered for both these are just a couple weeks away. And so it's time for you to go, I got to find out more. I got to pray and see if this is what God wants me to do. And if he says yes, go. And if he doesn't say yes to this, then look to Charleston and go there with us and do Kids Club, but live on mission this summer. And if you're looking at this, you begin to pray and you go, this just isn't possible. You can still go by supporting the trip and by giving money and helping people go and help, you know, just give some money towards the funding of people going. But listen, God has called you to himself so that he might send you. We've got to figure out what it looks like to live as people sent. And we're going to do that together, okay? So watch the screens, and then we're going to sing and worship Jesus.